This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Plus, auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Quote now at progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates, national average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
So why do you want to learn a new language?
I'll tell you why. Because ¿dónde está el baño? Can be a very important question at times. You know, Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. Fast track your language acquisition with immersive lessons designed to teach you to pick up languages in a natural way. I love the fact that I can go from my laptop to my phone to pretty much anywhere and learn the language of my choice. Not to mention, I'm bringing my communication skills to new heights. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a limited time, StarTalk Radio listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/starttalk. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/starttalk today.
Our universe is filled with secrets and mysteries, leaving us with many questions to be answered. Now more than ever, we find ourselves searching for those answers as the very fabric of space, science, and society are converging. Here, for the first time, these worlds collide as we give you the knowledge that breaks the barrier between what is science and what is merely pop culture. This is StarTalk.
Now, here's your hosts, astrophysicist Dr. Neil deGrasse Tyson and comedian Lynn Coblitz. StarTalk.
Welcome back to StarTalk. I am your host, Neil deGrasse Tyson. Joining me, my co-host, Lynn Coblitz. Lynn, you've been gone for 2 weeks.
I know. Did you miss me?
Yes, I did. I hope you were making people laugh wherever you were.
I was in Schaumburg, Illinois, and I did make people laugh. I had a lot of fun there. Thank you.
Excellent. Well, welcome back to the show. You're my co-host. Don't go away again.
Thank you, Neely. I miss you, too.
You know, we're going to talk about the universe as it inspires the creativity of artists. Artists throughout time and artists of all kinds, not only painters, but sculptors and the like.
That's very interesting.
Well, I've liked it because scientists, we hang out together and sometimes we're not appreciated as much as we would like to be for whatever reasons. And occasionally we see some of our handiwork reflected in the creativity of artists themselves. And we say to ourselves, maybe we're becoming mainstream.
Maybe we're creative and we're not nerds.
No,
let's take credit for that. Okay, I'll take credit for it, too.
So, actually, I saw enough of this happen. So, a few years ago, I wrote an essay for Natural History Magazine called The Universe as the Artist's Muse.
Dude, do you have a family? Do you ever not? You're always writing. You're like, I wrote a book about that.
Because I got some of what I do, okay?
That inspired the symphony I wrote.
So it was.
You're great, Neil. I'm happy that I get off the couch, but that's great.
So no, it was an essay because I was impressed by how often I was being called by artists to get the latest image from the Hubble telescope, or they wanted to find out the latest understanding of the Big Bang or black holes or Mars so that they can paint a scene, something inspired by it.
I mean, even as a comic, you know, artists tend to look at where people, all artists, whether it's writer, comedian, or visual artist, you know, we tend to look at the whole world. We look at everything over, under,
in,
out.
I just don't think science was in that portfolio until recently.
Well, science is part of the world.
It is definitely part of the world. In fact, it shapes the world. And so I think science has come a long way in terms of being felt by the general public. And so let's see what Bill Nye has to say.
Bill,
he's my boy. Bill, you know, Bill is Bill. He's got to set the tone.
He's a shaky little manic man we love.
Bill, give it to me.
Hey, Bill Nye, the science guy here. When you think of a planet in your mind's eye, what do you see? Many of us see Saturn, but no one could envision such a thing until astronomers, starting with Galileo, drew sketches of this and other worlds. I've seen Saturn rings, Saturn brooches, Saturn ladies' pumps, dress shoes with jeweled Saturns instead of bows. How sexy is that? With images of distant stellar clouds and our so-called nearby worlds, we can make planetary art from photographs. If you've never taken a bit of time with the Voyager spacecraft's pale blue dot, well, you must. And thanks to a spacecraft named after another astronomer, Cassini, you can see our world through the thin rings of another. You can see the Earth beyond the rings of Saturn, backlit by the sun. It's a photo. It's astronomy. But for me, it's inspirational. It's art. This is Bill Nye hoping that after we're done star talking, you do a bit of star looking at the works inspired by distant worlds and heavenly wonders.
Good. That was very deep, Bill Nye.
Bill, it's deep in 1 minute. That's a Bill Nye minute for you. You
know? Inspirational.
Yes, yes. And, you know, when you think of the first of the artists to be fully scientifically
inspired.
Just going
to say, who are we going to talk about first?
It's got to be Leonardo da Vinci. There's nobody like him before or since. I mean, here's a guy who was on top of science. He was all over engineering. He was architecture. And, oh, by the way, he painted on the side. You know, this guy, and he used to do experiments in physics experiments. The word physics didn't quite was defined back then. But he would do experiments in motion and weights.
Now he did this for his art?
Well, I don't know if it's for his art, but he did it in a way that then influenced his art. I don't know if that was the point of why he did these experiments. He was a smart, curious guy. You're smart and curious, you play with
stuff.
So
he was one of those guys that activated both sides of his brain?
Yes, completely. If you did like one of these scans on his brain, it would be firing in every cubic inch that was in there.
Oh, great guy to date.
What's the matter?
I think he sounds great. I'm just saying, some of these guys in history, I go, oh, he'd be a good, like Galileo, great boyfriend. Da Vinci, not so much.
Well, he's okay. Well, because he'd be too distracted by his own thoughts rather than by you.
And I like someone who's manipulated easily, not someone like that.
That would not happen with Leonardo, for sure.
No, but tell me more about him.
Yeah, so first, he's considered one of those brilliant people who ever lived. And you look at his writings, all the subjects that he touched, geology, physics, biology. And on the side, he was a painter, right? And so one of my favorite parts. Oh, by the way, you know about his he drew a model for a helicopter. It turns out it wouldn't work if you actually built it. but he's thinking about flying. He's thinking about flying and not just saying, gee, wouldn't it be great if I had wings and I flew like a bird? He's actually trying to draw a machine that could make that happen.
Oh, so he was one of the first people who started with machinery.
Yes, yes. To bring machinery to the task of ideas, rather than just imagining that you had wax wings like Icarus trying to fly to the sun. Yeah. He says, look, dude, you need some machines to do
this.
And
that's more like who I would date.
Right. So you've got this. And with Leonardo, he embraced all knowledge. And with all of that knowledge, it infused into his artistic expression.
How did it infuse in his art? What did it do?
Well, okay. Did you know that he...
Probably not. But go on.
Okay, so he basically pioneered. Well, he didn't invent perspective. That's something that's been around since ancient Greece. But it got lost. It got lost until the Renaissance. And Renaissance is French for rebirth. And so it's the rebirth.
And Leonardo was in the Renaissance.
Yes, he was. Yes, he was.
I'm going to show my ignorance. Okay, yes. So until then, let's go back a minute.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go back to like the Greeks and Egyptians and all these kind of people. Mm-hmm. Like first, okay, Egyptians, when they did hieroglyphics, they were flat.
Yeah, all those dudes are flat. Right, right. You look on, they're like they're all flat. And you never see like a three-quarter face of an Egyptian, right? They're always like side on.
Yeah, you didn't see them walking into the distance.
Right,
there's
right,
none
right,
of that.
Right. None of that. They're flat. So
and there were arrows pointing like, then they went that way, and then they went that way.
So they were flat.
Right.
And then it's the absence of perspective that, okay, that does
then
that.
The,
right.
When, then who? The Greeks?
Well, so...
Did they have perspective?
Yeah. Well, so perspective comes in, but it doesn't really... take off, right?
Not
it's there, it's discovered, they know about it, and it's used in the architecture, right? It's there, but you don't see paintings that make full use of this until the Renaissance. And so my point is that the physical principles of light and optics and ray tracing and in the case of Da Vinci, he studied the laws of physics. Not, they were not known as laws of physics back then, but he wanted to know how things balanced and how things would look if they were imbalanced. Because if you draw something that your eye and brain told you doesn't quite look right, it's not as convincing to you. So he wanted to make sure he understood how things worked.
I took art in college. My mother is an artist. And as a kid, I remember one of the things she always used to make me do, and they make you do this in art class and in school, is they make, or in college, they'd make you look at what you thought you saw and what you really saw.
Uh-huh.
And that's what it sounds like you're saying. Like, because sometimes what you think you see
is not what's
is
actually
not
there.
Exactly what's there.
Because your brain is messing with what it is you thought you saw.
Right.
And he's trying to get the basic data there so he gets it right.
My mom makes me squint.
You know,
when
who
you squint, you see what it really is.
You know who we have for this week's Star Talk? I spent some time with Peter Max.
Oh, that's
do you know
big
Peter
coup.
Max? You remember
yeah,
Peter Max?
Of course.
And he's still around.
He's
still
a big pop artist.
Pop artist. And did you know he's deeply inspired by cosmic themes?
I wouldn't be surprised by that.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's check out what Peter Max had to say.
Peter, I understand the universe inspires you. Is that a recent phenomenon or does it go far back?
It started when I was about 7 years old, living in China. And I was near Tibet and I met an older man who started talking to me, do you know about the stars and the planets? And I had no clue. And every day we'd talk about it. And by the time I think 5, 6, or 10 days went by, that's all I would think about and what I would go to sleep dreaming about it, thinking
so
about it.
It took only a week for it to just infiltrate your mind and body.
To jumpstart that. And believe it or not, it just grew and grew and grew. There's not a single day in my life where I'm not preoccupied with things about planets, stars, the universe. What is this whole thing? There's not a day that goes by where I don't think about it. I wake up in the morning and it's amazing. Like some cosmic alarm clock opens my eyes and I think about the universe. I don't think the bed I'm sleeping in. I don't care what day it is. I don't care what it is I have to do today. The first thing is the universe, the cosmos. Then I got to calm this down and then I look at my sheet, what I got to do today.
So
but the first thing is the universe.
So you've got it bad.
I got it bad.
You got it so bad it's good.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. That's why when I'm with you, see you on TV, talk to you, even hear your name, forgive me, but I get so inspired by that.
He's so nice to me.
Forgive me, he says. That's so beautiful. You're his muse.
He didn't have to say that, but that was so nice. So
he's
Peter Max,
lovely.
If you remember Peter Max, he wrote all those love posters from the 60s and it's like he was the artist of a generation.
Oh my
then.
Gosh, you still see all like t-shirts that have the peace sign and
yes,
the hearts.
And the
big hearts that he did. And I wanted to say what he said I thought was so sweet about waking up and how the universe inspires him. Like he doesn't think about his bed. That's what I'm saying. Like artists are so neat because they think in such a bigger canvas.
Yes.
Yeah. And the universe, I think, is inspirational because it's infinite.
I wonder if any listeners, if anything about science or space inspires them, either artistically or otherwise. Because I know it inspires me, and I'm a scientist. It inspires Peter Max, and
it inspires me.
And then he's an artist, and Lynn.
And I'm, you know, something like an artist.
And you know, with Da Vinci.
Call us.
Oh, yeah, sure. I got it.
At 877-5 Star Talk. Tell us what inspires you from art. I mean, from science.
Yeah, yeah. Let us know. Because there are many people who are inspired, who are creating art, who are making a difference in this world. And I'm charmed by that because, like I said, to see artists get mainstreamed in that way, if it becomes the subject of art, to see science get mainstreamed in that way, when science becomes the subject of artists, I think science has arrived in the culture in the ways that no one had ever imagined for it. Do you know? You know what Leonardo?
You're just excited about scientists being cool.
Do you know what Leonardo did to try to become a better artist?
What did he do, Neely?
He's drawing people, and so he dug up cadavers.
Really?
Dug them up. Peel them open to see.
Oh, gross.
It's gross, but if you're committed to your art, you'll do whatever it
takes. What do you do? We peel them open. See, this is, again,
they're dead. What do they care? They're dead. Who's
going to
know?
Jeffrey Dahmer did the same thing, and he didn't get credit for being. He said the same thing.
He killed them first. That's different. Leonardo didn't kill them first. They're already dead.
Oh, he just dug them up. That's fine.
Dug them up. Who's going to know? They dug them up, peeled back the skin.
That's weird.
Looked at how the muscles came together, how they formed. He wanted to know what was going on beneath the skin of his subjects.
Well, don't they have an exhibit now that bodies exist?
Yes. Yeah, which I haven't seen yet, but I've read about it.
got downright giddy.
No, because I want to go. I want to take my kids to see it so they can see. They're creeped out. My kids are 8 and 12, and they don't want to go.
You should not see that right now,
they're completely
Neil.
Creeped by it, but I'm going to drag them kicking and screaming so they can see what bodies are.
Are you really?
It's human physiology.
And if you create little serial killers, then don't be surprised.
And so that's maybe the modern version.
Take them to Madame Tussauds Wax Museum where all the normal kids belong right now.
So the problem. So here's what's interesting. If we had the bodies exhibit, which is in a lot of the big cities across the country right now, where they have people formerly alive shown without their skin, and you can see how the muscles and all the rest of the body parts come together in different poses and shapes and
really
and forms.
So it's really like a serial killer Disneyland.
I guess. Well, no, creepy. A demented serial killer Disneyland. Oh. Yes, because serial killers just kill people. You got to be demented enough to peel their skin back and see what the muscles are doing.
But I do understand why Leonardo would have done that.
If bodies exhibit existed back then, he wouldn't have to dig up cadavers. That's my point.
And I just saw a thing on National Geographic, because you know all my knowledge of everything is from you or television.
Okay.
I just saw a thing on National Geographic where they had found these pterodactyls.
Okay.
And they did that very thing. They had found just the fossil, just the skeleton, and they took it and they put the skeleton through a CAT scan.
All right.
Which
to
I
see
thought
what
was really
inside.
Weird, but there was nothing inside, of course, because it was a skeleton.
Right.
But they drew artistic pictures of, and then they could figure out what would have gone in there by what was missing.
There you go.
Isn't that kind of cool?
You don't have a pterodactyl cadaver, a literal cadaver, so you do the next best thing you can.
What's missing? That's how you figure it out.
And you know these bodies that are in the exhibit, they're preserved. You know, there are different ways you can preserve human flesh, and one of them is you'd sort of dip it in acetone, right? That gets rid of sort of the moisture and the water. I mean, so you know. And then they have to keep it shape. So they infuse it with silicone, which then hardens the tissue so that then it can stay on display.
Like Pamela Anderson.
Well, she's alive. I don't know what fraction of her body weight is silicone.
I don't know about that. Lisa Rinna, Pamela Anderson.
So they would not need to be prepped if they were donated their body to this exhibit. Is that what you're saying? Because they, you know, they're pre-made for the exhibit.
I'm saying they're going to last for a long time. They'll be around with roaches and cheese whiz.
And Twinkies, don't forget. You're listening to Star Talk Radio. I'm your host, astrophysicist Neil deGrasse Tyson. My day job is as director of the Hayden Planetarium in New York City. We are live in Los Angeles and Washington, D.C., and I'm here with Lynn Coplitz. Give us a call if you have something about space that inspires you, space or science in general. If you're an artist in particular, or if you're just somebody on the street.
Or a writer, or poet.
Right, exactly.
I
want to hear what it is that might influence you, because we'll hear more from Peter Max, learning about how science infused his creativity. Our toll-free number is 1-877-5-STAR-TALK. And we are live-streamed on the web on startalkradio.net. Let's take a break. We'll be right back.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you, like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the US on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
Whether you're a family vacation traveler, business tripper, or long weekend adventurer, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. And that's good, because there are a lot of me's. Choice Hotels has over 7,400 locations and 22 brands, including Comfort Hotels, Radisson Hotels, and Cambria Hotels. Get the best value for your money when you book with Choice Hotels. Cambria Hotels feature locally inspired hotel bars with specialty cocktails and downtown locations in the center of it all. Hey, that's me. Radisson Hotels have flexible workspaces to get the most of your business travel and on-site restaurants. That's me, too. And at Comfort Hotels, you'll enjoy free hot breakfast with fresh waffles, great pools for the entire family, and spacious rooms. Hey, that's me, too. I guess I'm just going to have to stay at all of them. Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Book direct at choicehotels.com, where travel comes true.
Hey, remember when we did that show about the science of the golf swing? Well, let's take that to the next level. And that's because PXG has developed the Black Ops driver so golfers don't have to sacrifice distance for forgiveness. And the science proves it. PXG Black Ops driver is a breakthrough in driver technology. It's a complete and total victory in golf club engineering, unlike anything you've ever seen before. Black Ops drivers are adjustable to deliver a combined MOI of 10,000 plus for unreal forgiveness. Now that's ridiculously high. The higher the MOI, the more forgiving the club will play. So you don't have to square the ball perfectly for it to go straight and get distance. Add PXG's new advanced material face technology, and you get incredible ball speed that pushes the distance to the absolute limits. More forgiveness, more distance, no sacrifices. PXG Black Ops driver. Hit your tee shot straighter and farther. The proof is in the science. Learn more and get free shipping on all equipment. Go to pxg.com/startalk and use code startalk at checkout. That's pxg.com/startalk. Use code startalk for free shipping on all equipment. pxg.com/startalk, code startalk.
Whether you're a space cadet or a rocket scientist, we want to hear from you. The phone lines are open. Call now. This is Star Talk.
Welcome back to Star Talk. I'm your host, Neil deGrasse Tyson, with Lynn Koplitz, my co-host, professional comedian.
Cadet.
Yes! We'll make you a space brigadier general by the end of these programs. Lynn Koplitz, a professional stand-up comedian who performs around the country. Lynn, and you've been gone for a couple of weeks. I'm so happy to have you back.
I'm happy to be back. Neil, now, before we move on, I want to go back to Leonardo da Vinci for a minute.
Yeah.
And we're talking about bodies and the bodies exhibit.
Because he dug up bodies to get the artistic form of what he drew.
Right. And then on the break, we were talking about the bodies exhibit now.
Yeah, during the break, yeah.
And then you told me a little something that I didn't know, which was that those were prisoners, like Chinese prisoners?
We're told that the bodies on display in the bodies exhibition, which is shown in many cities now, were not necessarily people who donated their bodies to this cause, that they were the bodies of prisoners who
were that's much
executed.
Better then. I like that better.
So it became a little controversial because the prisoner might not have had a choice in the matter.
Who cares? He was a prisoner.
No, I'm just saying. I'm just not voting for sides here. I'm just saying that it may be as controversial as it was in Leonardo's day when he's digging up cadavers.
Now, was it controversial when he was digging them up?
Yes, he was. You dig up a body, and the body's a sacred burial ground in a churchyard or wherever people were. Of course.
But did they know
I don't
he
think
was doing that?
He did it in the dark of night.
He did it late at night,
yeah,
right,
yeah.
With an assistant who made nothing, probably.
And, you know, one of the most famous illustrations from Leonardo's era is the Vitruvian Man. Have you ever seen this?
Is that the one with the man in the circle and the square?
Exactly.
He's hot. What? I mean, seriously.
Okay, I never thought of it that way. It's just like a little homunculus inside of a circle.
I just like from back then, everything's got abs. Jesus, Vitruvian Man.
That's true, yeah. Well, because it's drawn by people who like muscles. Who
and
like
I've never been to Pittsburgh. There's no abs in Pittsburgh.
No abs in Pittsburgh. You just performed there a few weeks ago.
Yeah, the great sports teams, but no abs.
The sports players have the abs, not the viewers.
Yes, exactly.
So that's going to be on their next, like, the tourist motto. Visit Pittsburgh, no abs.
Don't worry about your abs. Come to Pittsburgh.
So talk to me about Vitruvian Man. So here's where you get into trouble. Because if you have an aesthetic, okay. But if you want to believe that somehow the human form is some epitome of aesthetics, this is what went into the Vitruvian Man. And so we all remember this image. It's this man with his arms outstretched and his legs slightly parted, and it's a perfect circle drawn around him, and the arms are just touching the edge of the circle, and his feet are at the bottom of the circle.
So you're saying this isn't just art. This was to prove something.
It's to prove that the human form had some aesthetic beauty to it because the circle was the thing of beauty. And in the center of that circle, you know what was there?
His wee-wee?
No, his belly button.
Oh.
Okay. So what we...
Oh, I'm sorry.
What we learned...
I'm thinking about...
What we learned was that some people don't have those proportions. It was assumed that your distance from fingertip to fingertip equaled your height. And that was considered the ideal form. And then you actually measure people. And some people's hands are shorter. Some are longer. Mine are actually especially long. Some people have what you have a high ape index. It's what's been joked about. If your arms are really long compared to your body height, my arms are a foot longer than my height. So I can touch your nose sitting right where I am right now.
Without... How do you know that?
Well, because you know. So the point is, in
no,
that
no,
circle.
No, you don't know. Did you measure them?
Measure my arm, the distance from fingertip to fingertip, yeah.
You're hilarious.
Yeah, it's 84 inches. And so that's, so I'm just telling you that that's, it's not everybody. I'm not alone in
but
those who don't fit the circle.
People are bigger now, right? They were smaller then.
Yeah, but if it's in proportion, it's just a bigger circle. Everything would be in proportion. So that didn't really turn out the way anyone had hoped. But it remains an iconic vision. It remains an iconic vision of what humans would have looked like. And then there's this thing with the golden ratio. You remember that? Many people have heard of it, but don't quite remember it. It has a mathematical form. I'll tell you what it is mathematically, but it's more interesting artistically.
Oh, really?
Okay.
Oh, really? Mathematics is not more interesting than art. That's a new idea.
All right. So if you take a line segment, and you could split it exactly in half if you wanted, right? And then it'd be half and half. But if you don't split it in half and make one segment a little longer than the other... Okay? You want to cut it into two pieces where A plus B divided by B.
Tell me more.
A plus B divided by B is in the same ratio as A to B, as B is to A. Now, that's what it is arithmetically. Okay? So now you can write that out as an equation. It's 1 plus the square root of 5 divided by 2 to 1.
Okay. Neil, I'm so sorry. I don't want to be disrespectful, but I'm going to shoot myself in the face if you keep talking. What does this mean?
I'm just saying, so if you do the math, you get a ratio of 1 to about 1.6. In other words, back then, if you designed form, you would design it so that the base was 1.6 units long and the height was 1 unit high. And that would feel aesthetically pleasing to you. And that was called the golden ratio.
Oh, that's very interesting.
You know what they've done lately? They
can
measured,
they do that with your face?
Exactly.
Too?
They're measuring people's faces, the width of the face and the height of the face and the nose to the eyes to the mouth. And the claim is those people where those measurements capture the golden ratio are considered more beautiful than other people.
I was going to say that's very creepy because that's like that movie Gattaca that's saying Gattaca. That those people are more perfect.
Wow. Could this is the one where they make the genetically choose your offspring. So you choose one that has more golden ratios and then more people will think you're attractive.
But that's not fair either because in different cultures, in different places, the ratios are going to be different, right? Like if you go to Africa, facial features are going to be different than facial features maybe in certain parts of
America. This is the challenge.
They
claim wherever. They've done it for people all around the world, and everyone focuses back on this golden ratio. I'm suspicious of it, but I'm just reporting what they've said, and it's fascinating that there might be some
scary.
Genetic.
It sounds a little Aryan to me. I don't like it.
That there might be some genetic propensity for that.
I don't like it.
And do you know about the? Not only that, in Da Vinci's most famous painting is what? Do you know what his most famous painting is?
Oh, don't do this to me. Make me feel stupid. Mona Lisa?
The Mona Lisa, of course.
I have it in my room. She looks like a dude.
You have a copy of the Mona Lisa. Let's get that straight.
Yeah, well, not the real one. I mean, I live in a 3-4 wall cup that smells like trash and says, wash me on the Sharpie marker on the wall. So, I don't think the real Mona Lisa's in my apartment.
So what, she looks masculine to you?
Yeah, she looks like a dude.
Well, you know what they found? They were able to study the painting. You can expose it to a certain wavelength of light that penetrates the top surface of paint, and you can see a whole other painting, a whole other illustration below it. And it's rumored that was a self-portrait of Leonardo himself. That was the first attempt at whatever he was doing on that canvas.
Oh, and then he painted like his inner Mona Lisa?
Oh, well, I don't know. Is that why you think she looks like a dude?
I didn't know that. I mean, until you just said it. But yeah, she does look like it. I look at her every morning. She's right over, like in front of my bed, and she looks like a dude.
Yeah, well, okay. So,
a sweet dude.
So this is Leonardo in drag, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I'm just saying it looks a little bit like there was a review back then. But yeah, because she's got kind of a thick like forehead, and she's kind of cross-eyed.
I got to look again. I got to look again to check that out.
She's a little Liza Minnelli-ish.
Put her in a review. Is that in Vegas?
Exactly.
Interesting. You're listening to Star Talk Radio, and for this episode, I spent some quality time with Peter Max, pop artist from the 1960s, and he's still at it, right on through to today. And let's see what more he has to say about how the universe has inspired him.
He's interesting.
we are part of something that is so enormously big. You know, when you talked about the molecules in one glass of water, there are more molecules in one glass of water than there are glasses of water on planet Earth. Well, that line that you gave me about this feeds me for the next 6 months. I want to think about this at least once a day. I love it so much.
Well, I'm happy to be your fuel supply. So let me ask you, are you more influenced by science directly, or is there a bit of philosophy that folds in?
There's science. There's the mystery of the science, because there's so much more we don't know than we do know, and we do know a lot, and so that we must probably not know a billion times as much, but it's wonderful of what we do know. But I was also lucky in 1966, just about the same time, I met a Swami, a holy man from India.
So you would use pure science as your source of objects and imagery, but the philosophy is a means of how you would interpose them.
Yes. So it was nice. Through meditation, I was able to get very, very peaceful and quiet, but through looking at the universe, I would get excited. And so in between the peacefulness and the universe is where the art world lived.
That's Peter Max. He's just so in tune with his own sense of art and self and science.
He sounds so like a cool hippie guy, like very like down to earth. He's, and calm. He calms me just listening
to him. Yeah, isn't it? He's got one of these calming voices. It's so beautiful.
And you too, the two of you are like a glass of warm milk and a cookie.
You're listening to Star Talk Radio. Our phone number is 1-877-5-STAR-TALK. If there's some aspect of science that has influenced you inspirationally as a creative person or just in your thoughts, give us a call. We have Nancy from Santa Monica. Nancy, you're live on Star Talk.
Hi, Nancy.
Hi. So, I'm dabbling in art. I'm actually an environmental scientist, but I like art a lot, and I've observed a lot of artists who've been inspired by environmental science. And I thought I'd just share this something with you. We have a bunch of art galleries here in Santa Monica called Bergamot Station, and there was this really cool exhibit on hyperbolic crochet. And what this is, you guys were talking about Leonardo da Vinci and perspective, right? Well, that's about flat planes as a geometry. Well, apparently, there's another kind of geometry that was, I guess, driving mathematicians crazy, the hyperbolic space, which is the geometric opposite of a sphere. And I guess I was so taken by Zig that I actually photographed the caption here. So in 1997, there was a Cornell mathematician who was trying to figure out how to model this geometry, and so he wound up crocheting it. And you wound up finding that corals, kelp, sponges, all these different kind of anatomical features are actually hyperbolic geometry. So these artists have gotten together and crocheted these incredible kind of landscapes of these objects with hyperbolic crochet. And that was an exhibit at Bergamot Station.
So there are a lot of children now going around without mittens because the crochet effort is going to art.
I love crocheting. It's very difficult, but it does have a lot of that spiral, and it is very interesting.
So are you saying that crochet is the natural artistic way to express these forms in nature?
Well, no, crochet was a technique that humans could use to model this geometry, which was very hard to do mathematically otherwise, or I guess even on a computer. So,
well, that's very cool. And so anyone near Santa Monica, go check it out, definitely.
That sounds so interesting. I'm going to look it up online. Thank you, Nancy.
Thank you, Nancy.
You know what I like about that, too, is because if you're using yarn or whatever is what you use, or rope to crochet, that is also going, that's great for studying the body too, because it is like tendons and muscles.
Oh, and how it holds together and how it doesn't.
Yeah, you can pull it and make it twist it and make it do things that you can't do with just charcoal. And so it brings in perspective.
You'd use yarn as a substitute for muscle.
It brings in perspective. Shut up, Neil. I have lots of crocheted things in my mind. I just told Neil to shut up.
One other thing about perspective, another very famous painting is The Last Supper. The Last Supper, it's one of the
most famous. Oh, Jesus' dinner party.
Jesus' Last Supper. And they call it supper rather than dinner. I
like to call
it
Jesus' dinner party. I just love a man that throws a dinner party at the end.
And if you look at that, there are lines of perspective that reach what they call a vanishing point. And the vanishing point is where all the lines that are horizontal in a room or in a painting end up focusing down in the backdrop of the painting, and it focuses right on Jesus' eye.
Really? That's very interesting.
So wherever you are in the painting, the lines take you right to the center of his face. And so
for those who don't know, when you're drawing or painting perspective, a vanishing point is the one of the first things you draw so that you can...
Because everything
comes off of
that,
works into that.
Exactly.
So that's very interesting that the vanishing point... So that was no accident that the vanishing point was Jesus' eye.
No accident at all. And plus his 12 dinner guests.
And he was the center of the whole thing. So
we have a tweet. You can tweet us at Star Talk Radio. We have a tweet. Someone asks, do you think Georgia O'Keeffe's paintings are a combination of science and art? And
anatomy. Their vaginas. No, they're
flowers.
They're vagina flowers. They're vagina flowers,
they're
tweeter.
Flowers.
They are not flowers. Look at them. Please.
Okay.
Look into those flowers. They're not just flowers. You know what, Neil?
Okay. I'm just. Oh, wait.
This is what annoys me about
I'm
men.
Just trying, right sometimes
there.
A flower is
I
just
a flower.
Flower.
Well, sometimes it needs you to look for the G spot on it.
So what we're saying is Georgia O'Keeffe took the flowers of the Southwest and folded them with her knowledge of human anatomy to create a whole new expression of a whole other way to communicate with the viewer.
Yeah, I think it's what Georgia O'Keeffe and many artists do, great artists do, is that they make you look at something a different way. Well, they make you see the other possibilities in it.
All right, I'll give other possibilities.
Yeah, and I think Leonardo did that. I think all the great artists and painters, and they've all done that. And writers, they've taken things that everybody looks at every day, and they've twisted it and showed you other sides to it.
We've got another tweet. They're asking, is the golden ratio, which we talked about a moment ago, only about aesthetics, or is it indicative of the health of an organism? And that's a fascinating point.
What a great question. What kind of geniuses do we have listening to the show? My family's clearly not tuning in.
So, no, what's good about that is if the aesthetic is sort of hardwired into our brain and we identify beauty that way, and then you turn ill or something happens to your bodily form.
Don't put the horns on me. You pointed at me.
No, and if you turn ill, then your body starts taking a shape that does not fulfill that golden ratio, and you look less attractive to others. It's a fascinating concept there. So maybe it is hardwired.
I'm angry.
So my question is, I don't know the answer to that, but it's an intriguing
osteoporosis.
Yeah, exactly. Your bones start becoming misshapen, and you no longer fulfill the golden ratio.
Well, I think there should be a golden ratio for different ages.
Okay. So there should be like a silver ratio, a platinum ratio.
Yeah, just like the average, what your average weight should be or whatever. It should just be like, here's the, right, the silver ratio.
That's an
golden.
Excellent, excellent thought.
The platinum.
Excellent thought. We've got some more of my interview with Peter Max. I was in his studio in New York City, and he's got this huge studio where he's still painting. He's still doing it. The guy is still doing it.
Why didn't I get to go to this? Well, I'll take you to my thing. Well, I love Peter Max.
You didn't ask. Let's see what more Peter Max has to tell me.
While I was a realist and I started painting realism like Michelangelo, I couldn't get any work. No galleries were interested in it, no museums, nothing. And I used to sit in a little cafe, which back then was almost like what is a Starbucks today, and I would make my astronomical drawings every day because I loved it. And I had maybe 100 little drawings with me, and one day an art director said to me, Peter, what's this on the bottom of your portfolio? And I go, oh, it's nothing, because I was shy. I was a realist. I was a classical guy.
Because at the top of your portfolio was all your realistic illustration.
Yeah, I wanted to be like Michelangelo. I wanted to be revered as like I was, because I was so good in realism. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, and one day he said to me, what's this on the bottom of your portfolio? I said, no, it's nothing. It's nothing. And he insisted I take it out. And when he looked at it, he went, oh, my God, this stuff looks unbelievable. Hey, guys, fellas. Girls, come over here, see what this guy does. And I walked out of there for the first time in my life with 14 projects that paid like, you know, a few hundred dollars each, which was today like a few thousand each. And when I delivered them about 10 days later, I walked out of there with 22 projects. And in the next 18, 20 months, I won 66 gold medals in art and design for my creativity and for my inventiveness. And I suddenly realized that the stuff I was doing, which was these cosmic characters and cosmic stars and cosmic runners and all these characters with wings that I invented only because of my interest in the space area, that I invented characters that lived there that really weren't anything I could see in the regular world.
So it's fair to say that the universe birthed your career as an artist.
Completely.
So you want to be a great artist? Study the universe. That's the...
I think that's very cool that's his inspiration.
Yeah, and so rather, it wouldn't have to be the universe in particular, but I think it's fair to say that you can be a new kind of an artist, or as an artist you can reach another dimension of reality if you come to it with some kind of science literacy. Is that fair?
Well, I think it is fair, but I think the other thing that our show keeps bringing up is that science makes you ask questions.
Mm-hmm.
It keeps you asking questions.
Probing
and I think
the nature of reality.
A creative person keeps asking questions, it keeps broadening their... you know, their view of things. And that's what happened to him. He kept asking questions and he kept creating these characters and people built on that.
And it's not just science ideas. It's actually, there's math even beyond the golden ratio that we talked about earlier. There's algebra. So there's a branch
of... Look at the Matrix.
Well,
right. Movies and things are being built around this whole thing now.
Exactly. And there's a branch of algebra called linear algebra, which is not, you don't normally greet that in high school, but you can take classes in it in college, where there are 3D computer games that are enabled because of a huge mathematical engine that's driving them.
Oh, yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, no, so that's how...
Like Grand Theft Auto.
I don't know
because
the extent
of science
of math.
And math, you can kill a hoe and steal a car.
I haven't checked the math engine on that particular game.
But you know what scares
But it allows them. What it does is they're trying to create a virtual world for you that you move through. And if you're stealing cars in it, fine, that's your virtual world. But the perspective that changes as you run down the street and as doorways open and as corridors show up, they have to calculate at every split second what the new scene looks like as you travel through that
world. And what it will look like if you do this move or that move.
Exactly.
They
don't know what you're going to do next. So it has to be ready for that. And that's the computing power.
Oh, that's true. Because I play Lara Croft Tomb Raider. When you dive in the water, all of a sudden you're in the ocean and the music stops.
Do you want to be Lara Croft?
No, she's way too active.
She was. I got to admit, I liked the movie when I saw
it. I did, but the video game is very active and annoying. At one point, I just started jumping off the slide.
Okay.
But here is what concerns me as an actress, aspiring actress and comic. You know, CGI now, computer graphic imaging, is really taking over. I went to see Bolt, the 3D, when it was 3D, with my friends.
Bolt is with the dog?
Yeah, with my friends' sons. And I have to grab little kids from out of nowhere so I can go to these movies and not look scary. But and I went to see it. It was great. But when I was a kid, 3D movies were not as intense as they are now. I mean, they're so realistic.
Right.
And as an actress, it started bothering me, Neil, because I started thinking, wow, when are we going to fade out? Like the way talkies took over silent films.
Right, right.
Like, I'm finally getting acting roles, and I'm done. They're going to start just drawing people.
Yeah, you draw people and animate them in 3D, and then they won't need you anymore.
So isn't there a chance that regular actors and actresses are going to become obsolete?
Well, you know what they can do? They can fully scan your body in various motions and then fully get you to read like a whole encyclopedia of words. And then they have all your vocabulary, they have all your body motions, and they can just cast you in a 3D animated movie.
So they might
not
need us anymore.
No. Yeah, you just sort of sell your body that one time and then they're used, you get used later on. Yeah.
Well, I know there are people in LA listening to the show right now. If this scares you because you're waiting tables and you're thinking, what now? Call us at 877-5-STAR-TALK.
If you're worried about being out of a job, is that what?
Yeah. I mean, some of the science stuff, when it comes into the creative form, scares me because, like, for example, I don't like new digital film. I hate it.
Nude digital film?
No, the digital film versus like 16mm
things. Oh, okay.
Let's shoot everything on digital. Now all of a sudden, I don't want to see people with lines in their face. I can see that in a mirror myself. I want pretty people. I want the old grainy imaging. I want the Barbara Walters lens that looks like it's got Vaseline over it. That's what I want.
The soft focus lens.
Yes, thank you.
Well, you know, photography is a, you know, it's...
Did I make you nervous? No, all of a sudden, Neil's like, I'm never going to be on The View.
Right.
What has Lynn done?
I know. We're going to go to break, and we're going to come back. Give us a call at 1-877-5-STAR-TALK, and we're tweetable at Star Talk Radio. And we'll be right back, and we're going to talk about photography in the universe and how that's inspired whole generations of artists and movements, social movements, simply because of images we've obtained from the night sky. See you in a moment.
Do you want to set up your child for success? Of course you do. Maybe you want to save money on private tutoring, or maybe it's just out of your budget altogether. Is this a big school year for your child? Like maybe they're starting kindergarten, middle school, or high school, or some other milestone. Maybe your family moved and they're starting at a new school. Is your child ahead? Not getting challenged enough in class? Well, we love that little smarty, but we want them to be engaged. IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids covering math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed to help them really understand and master topics in a fun way. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid, no matter the age or the personality. There's one site for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. Kids can use it at home on the computer or on the go through the app on your phone or your tablet. No more grading those worksheets. IXL grades everything itself. And no more trying to figure out how to explain math equations or grammar rules yourself. IXL has built-in explanation videos. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And Star Talk Radio listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/StarTalk. Visit IXL.com/StarTalk to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
Bringing space and science down to earth. You're listening to Star Talk.
Star Talk Radio, Neil Tyson on the line here. We've got Lynn Koplitz, my co-host, Lynn.
Hello.
Hello. We've got a caller who called into 1-877-5-STAR-TALK with our question. They have a question about the relationship between science and art and inspiration. Who is the muse for whom? We have Rick from L.A. Rick, you're live on Star Talk.
Hi, Rick.
Hey, how you guys doing today?
Well, thank you.
We're doing good. How are you doing, Rick?
Big fan.
Oh, thank you. So what you got for us?
You're talking about how science has inspired art over the years, and I was just wondering if you could think of any examples where art has inspired science.
Oh, that's a good question, Rick.
Ooh. Well,
scientific discovery.
Yeah, here's the best I could do for you there. For example, before the era of photography, when people nonetheless had telescopes and they wanted to be able to tell others about what they saw, they had to draw what they saw. So they needed an artistic talent just to communicate their science to other people. And if they were not good at their art, they'd be showing something that was not really what they saw to other people, and that would confound any attempt to have sort of a level-headed assessment of what was going on.
Well, also the constellations. At first, they came up with like what the stars. They came up with pictures, correct?
Yeah, but there's no science anywhere in that. No, there's just
stars.
Well, they're connect the dots points. That's where, I mean, they are scientific subjects themselves, but things we would only learn much later, long after anyone was drawing pictures with them.
Okay, so Rick, the answer is we don't really know.
No, let me offer a little insight. I can say that artists, not to speak for artists, because I don't claim myself among them, although my brother's an artist, I can say that all artists I know are driven often, if not all the time, by some aesthetic. And it's the aesthetic that drives, that fuels their attempt to create a form. And I can tell you, without hesitation, that as a scientist, we approach the universe, we approach the natural world with a similar expectation that what we're going to discover is something aesthetically pleasing, something beautiful, something that will make you say, that is nature at its finest. And so I can tell you that we share a common driver, but whether or not there's some art that inspired a scientific discovery. It may be that
if you're talking about what kind of art you're talking about, because we've already discussed on this show that there are films that have probably, and television programs like Star Trek, that have inspired scientists.
Exactly. So what happens there is the
close
art
encounters
triggers someone to be interested in a subject.
Exactly.
Because it affects them in an emotional way, and then they become charged, and then they want to learn about the science.
I think what we're saying is we all need each other.
Okay. Kumbaya. Hold on. So, Rick, thanks for calling in.
Thanks, Rick.
Thank you.
And we still have some more from Peter Max. Peter Max, you got to love him. And like you said, Lynn, he's such a soothing voice. I could just listen to him all day.
He's like Venus Flytrap. Remember him on
WKRP was scary.
In Cincinnati? They've got that really smooth age.
Let's see what more he's got to tell us.
I was in Cleveland. I had an art show. And I wake up in the morning and I go back to sleep and I wake up again about 10:30 and I'm flip-flopping around the TV set. And suddenly I see Neil Tyson with his khaki pants rolled up past his knees, squatting down, lifting up a handful of sand and saying, you see all the sand? There are 10,000 beaches in the world. They're like 10 or 20 miles long. And then he lifts up another big pile full of sand, and he said, as it's running through his fingers, he says, for every grain of sand that we have on these 10,000 beaches, there are more planets in the universe. And I meant, oh my God, this is so big, it's so gigantic that all the grains of sands in 10,000 beaches that are like probably 10 feet deep and 10 to 20 miles long, that there are more planets than this. The first thing I looked is for my phone. I found Neil Tyson's phone number, and I called him up and said, is this real? He said to me, it's probably bigger than that.
Well, I'm honored to have blown your mind without drugs. What do you think of that?
It is like there's nothing that's nicer to be blown away by than the cosmos, the universe, these complete unbelievable facts that exists. And the more you think about it, the more you dream about it, the more it starts making sense. And you still know that you're just this little microscopic little thing in the universe thinking about all the bigness, the largest thing. I mean, isn't it true now that because of this thing they call the string theory, they think that there could be other universes?
There are a couple of ideas that lead to the idea that there could be a multiverse and we're just one bubble within an uncountable number of other cosmos.
Just like when Hubble discovered the first few galaxies.
Exactly.
And now they're discovering maybe more universes.
It's philosophically the same thing, because back then we imagined it was only one galaxy, then he discovered a universe of galaxies.
Yeah, you got it. There must be a place you can hide. It is too big. It's too big to imagine. You know, sometimes you got to take a tranquilizer to calm it down. It's just so amazing.
Okay, now, I didn't think this could happen, but Peter Max made me like you more.
Really? So I got dibs from Peter Max, and now
actually makes you sound even cooler.
Okay, I didn't know he'd go off on that way. I was just trying to get
so
some
sweet that you touched him so much
content for our show, but I didn't know that.
And he's an amazing artist, yes, an amazing influence in person, and that's really neat.
Yeah, you know,
I have a homeless person in my neighborhood who says I really inspired him.
Was that guy that was on the sidewalk when I visited you the other day?
It was the lady who wears these big crazy Erykah Badu wraps in her hair. Yes.
So photography can inspire people. Do you remember, I don't know how old you are, Lynn, but in 1968, Apollo 8 went to the moon. It didn't land, but it actually circled the moon and came back and took a picture of Earthrise above the lunar landscape.
I was very little when that happened.
Okay, but you've certainly seen that photo. It's called Earthrise. By the way, Earth does not rise on the moon, because the moon doesn't rotate compared to the Earth. So Earth is just always in the sky. So the picture is misrepresents what actually happens on the moon. It rose because they're in orbit around the moon when they took the picture. That's what.
Great. Yeah, thanks. But
okay, I'm just saying.
I'm saying that's great. Thanks. Is a moon camera different than a regular camera?
They're bigger and more expensive and take better pictures than most cameras you'll ever see in your life.
Do you have one?
No, I don't. No.
You do, don't you?
No. So what I'm saying is that picture that showed Earth, without any lines of continents or states or cities, it was just this blue orb juxtaposed as part of the scenery of another world, transformed our understanding of our place in the universe. And the modern green movement is traceable to that photograph. And so there's scientific photograph that became iconic art that influenced a generation of people to take action. I just had to share that with you.
Interesting. Now, the Hubble images and things, is that the same kind of camera?
Hubble, no, it's a digital camera. That was a regular sort of film camera back in the days of Apollo 8. And now Hubble Pictures is digital. It's a very expensive version of the detector that's in the camera that all of us have, the digital cameras that we all use. It's called a CCD, charge-coupled device camera. So I'm just telling you. You asked. Did I volunteer that? You
LOL.
Asked.
LOL.
All right. You asked. And so the Hubble photos are today's generation of exposure to the rest of the world. And
which are better?
Oh, definitely digital pictures are far superior.
Because they're more accurate.
They're far superior.
But they're not as romantic. Well, you know, I'm a Luddite.
In terms of romance, do you know there's a scene in the Carl Sagan film Contact? I don't know if you saw the film.
Yes, of course.
You remember where Jodie Foster was taken by the aliens into their distant land?
Yeah.
And she's looking and it's so beautiful. And you remember what she says?
No.
She says, because she's speechless by the beauty of it all. She says, they should have sent a poet.
Oh.
Yeah. That's just...
But that's poetical in itself.
Poetical or political?
Whatever, poetical.
I'm just... And other thing...
Neil?
I'm a big fan of...
I'm not Peter Max. You better watch what you say.
I'm a big fan of Van Gogh's Starry Night.
Oh, you think?
It inspired a song.
Just so everyone knows, Sorry, who doesn't Starry know Night. Neil, Neil has Starry Night stuff all over his office. Everywhere, like pillows, books, which is great because it's beautiful.
And it was the cover of one of my books, too. I can't, because it's a Starry Night. It's an artist who, he could have named that painting Sleepy Village.
Neil, you know what? We had this argument before. No, he couldn't.
Yes,
it's all stars in the sky. It's about the sky, not about the village.
I'm agreeing. So the man came through. I'm totally with you on that. And then there's other art that gets inspired. You know, the ceiling of the Grand Central Terminal?
You know, yeah, you took me there and showed the ceiling to me.
Yeah, well, you didn't need me to take you there. It's Grand Central Terminal.
I know, but I never really looked up at it until you took me there.
Oh, that's different. Okay, so that ceiling, did you know that all the stars are backwards? And that pissed me off when I discovered that.
And who did that? What was that?
What's
that
the guy's
name?
I forgot this. Paul Heyu from 1912.
Was he dyslexic?
French artist. I think he was not sufficiently scientifically literate to know that the image of the sky he was looking at in a map was the reverse of what he had to put on the ceiling.
Or he might have been dyslexic, Neil.
You know, it can't be that dyslexic. Dyslexic is flip a few letters or a few words, not an entire sky. So there's no excuse. I don't forgive him at all.
I wonder if he still got paid.
And you know, with those Hubble photos, some of the colors are vivid. They can represent colors that you would see if your eyes were huge and if your retina was sensitive to the filters that the Hubble telescope uses. You wouldn't necessarily see what Hubble sees. You would, however, if you can tune your eyeballs in the way we tune the Hubble telescope.
I don't get that. What does that mean? So it means the colors that I think I see on there are not the colors that really is if I'm up in space?
That's great. If you had special eyeballs, you would see it that way. You would see it just that way. We have feeble eyeballs.
So in space, if I was in spacecraft looking at it, it wouldn't look like that.
No, it would look like something else that was commensurate with your eyeballs. But in Hubble, we want to see...
That's aggravating.
Well, I'm sorry, but it's just, you know, what happens when people put on makeup before they get photographed? It's not what you really look like. It's something else. I'm just letting you know.
But if you were there on the planet, would it look like that?
It would look
like
different.
Like, is Mars really red?
Yes. Yes. You do like you're getting angry with me.
Because I just
we got
find
one
that
more
aggravating.
Clip. Let's get a fast clip of Peter Max, our final clip with him. Let's see what Maury has to tell us about how he's been inspired by science.
How much he loves you.
I want to make an animated film. I told you about it a little earlier. Okay. And this film has a lot to do with the universe. And it's with, like, you know, us suddenly connecting with another species from far, far away who have some common interest with us. And it's a beautiful, it's a musical. It's a 2-hour musical. And I'm about maybe halfway through designing it, conceiving it, and I'm going to go to some of my friends in Hollywood and see how I can get it made.
Well, we got to get you back when that comes out.
Yes.
Listen, Peter Max, it's been great having you on Star Talk, and thanks for your hospitality, inviting me into your studio where I'm inundated by paintings ready to fall on me. This place is this place, you need like 3 more floors of this warehouse.
Thank you. We just have a couple floors here with about 100 people, but it's my playground. In the morning, I can't wait to get here. At night, I don't want to leave.
That's how all jobs should be. Peter Max, thanks for being on Star Talk.
Thank you.
That was Peter Max.
I love him.
Oh, my God. Why do you love all the guests that I have on the interview?
I think he's my new favorite.
Okay.
Until our guest next week. She's my real favorite. Okay. But it's really awesome.
So, I don't know if you know that NASA is not unmindful of the fact that art matters in our culture and in society. So that it's not just fighter pilots, flyboys, and scientists they send into space.
They send artists?
Well, no, they don't send artists into space. Not yet. But there's an arts in Space program, where artists are invited to capture the discoveries of NASA, the voyages of NASA, in whatever is their artistic means of expression. And it was started in 1962, and they've commissioned artists such as Norman Rockwell and others, and it chronicles the history of space exploration through the eyes of artists and others. And there's more than 2,000 works of art by 350 artists in their archive.
That's interesting. And listen, next week, this has been a great show, but next week, tonight, we need everyone to watch the Joan Rivers Roast.
Joan Rivers is being roast. She's a buddy of yours.
She's
apparently
my dear friend, and she's on our show next week.
Yes, indeed. Thanks to your connections. I could have never had access to this
woman.
We had
so much fun with her.
She's an icon of comedic. She's going to be riffing on all the science that we're trying to take seriously here and tell us where that fits and where it sits. You've been listening to Star Talk Radio.
Good show, Neil.
Funded by the National Science Foundation. We'll see you next week.
Keep looking up.
All right.
You have just been listening to General Montgomery Smith.
Astronomical.
You have just been listening to General Montgomery Smith.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.